Good afternoon. So we're going to go from national zoning to something as specific as early child care centers in one particular county. But we are going to preserve an emphasis on this notion of policy and the effect that policy can have on nutrition behaviors and healthy eating and what have you. I have no conflicts of interest to disclose. The objective, what do we want to accomplish from this next 15 to 20 minutes or so, is to be able to discuss the value of early child care centers as arenas for intervening on childhood obesity, assess evaluation methods appropriate for determining the effectiveness of interventions, seeking to improve nutrition policy and practices in these centers, and lastly, describe an effective nutrition policy and practice intervention taking place within early child care centers that specifically focus on racially, ethnically diverse, low-income children. In order to accomplish this, just a brief agenda going through the presentation here. So the context in which we're working is, despite the successes we've made as public health professionals in slowing the rate of growth, not actually decreasing childhood obesity, we find nevertheless that disparities in obesity persist in preschool-age children across racial, ethnic, and income groups. Getting more specific, due to the amount of time and nutritional intake large numbers of children experience in early child care centers, or ECCs, plus the benefits we already know about early targeted anti-obesity interventions, it just goes to the reason that early child care centers and their nutrition environments are valuable public health arenas for preventing and addressing childhood obesity. So that being said, though, I myself have had the privilege of having several years of experience working in middle schools and elementary schools, but there's an ongoing need for more investigation into the implementation and effects of these sort of environmental policy-based prevention initiatives out in settings other than schools. Specifically, there's a particular need for studies that reach minority children in institutional settings such as early child care centers. So what we want to do is we did our study involving early child care centers serving racially and ethnically diverse children located within areas of high rates of poverty, diabetes, minority representation, and unhealthy to healthy food retail. So therefore, we evaluated the extent to which training early child care providers in the implementation of evidence-based strategies improved the nutrition policies and practices of early child care centers serving this particular target population within Broward County, Florida. So in order to do this, we did an evaluation design involving a one-group pre-post test. Now, for the evaluators in the crowd, I'm sure you're all kind of like cringing in your chairs. What about random assignment and random, selection? Well, if you were able to attend my presentation on Monday, where we have our lessons learned on dealing with this particular population, given the resource restraints we had, this was the best that we could do. Our study population involved a stratified random sample of eligible early child care centers in Broward County, Florida, and the sampling frame consisted of all licensed child care centers in Broward County participating in the Quality Counts Initiative, which is a county-wide quality improvement initiative in Broward County, the USDA Child and Adult Care Food Program in Broward County, and lastly, TOUCH Early Child Care Center Trainings. TOUCH is the name of the grant that I will address shortly. The stratified sample was done such that it would cover the intervention's priority zip codes, secondary zip codes, and additional zip codes identified through a GIS analysis of zip codes within Broward County that had higher proportions than those for the county for diabetes, poverty, population identified as black, and unhealthy retail to healthy retail square footage by population density, or an unhealthy food index. The priority zip codes involved the convergence of all four of these variables. The secondary zip codes involved the convergence of at least diabetes and poverty. And then lastly, the additional zip codes were those that have proportions for these variables at or below those of the county. So this is a picture of Broward County. To your west, it just occurred to me, Broward County is in southern Florida, for those of y'all that don't know. I guess just like Manhattan, people think that, Manhattan's the center of the universe. Us in Broward County, I guess evidently, if I'm any example, assume the same. To the west is the Everglades, to the right is the Atlantic Ocean, to the south is Miami-Dade. So we're way down there in the southern part of the peninsula of Florida. And now obviously you can't make out the writing, but just as the visual to suggest what we're doing here, in the upper left-hand corner where the purple is, that is the concentration of diabetes in the county. The lower left is the concentration of unhealthy food index. In the upper right-hand corner is the concentration of black population in the county. And then the lower right is concentration of poverty as operationalized by earned income tax credit. And the main map in the middle is the convergence of those four variables, and those were where we ended up targeting our priority zip codes. The intervention was funded by the CDC's Community Transformation Grant, which enabled and supported awardees to implement and evaluate evidence-based community preventive health activities designed to reduce and prevent chronic disease. In Broward County, the Broward Regional Health Planning Council was a recipient of CTG funds and used it to launch Transforming Our Community's Health, or TOUCH. Since this time, Congress killed the community transformation grants, which were part of the Prevention Public Health Fund within the Affordable Care Act. It was part of the omnibus budget bill of about a couple of years ago, and so this five-year grant came to an end 2 years early. But fortunately, we were able to make some accomplishment along the way. And this particular intervention involving early child care centers, TOUCH used a community-based participatory approach to create a broad coalition of community partners to enhance standards and protocols involving nutrition, physical activity, and screen time practices in early child care centers in Broward County. In order to accomplish this, they had implemented a train-the-trainer program for conducting assessments of and providing technical assistance to early child care centers, wherein members of our team trained Quality Counts Master Teachers, once again the quality improvement program we have in the county, on previously established nutrition physical activity program to then deliver to the staff of the early child care centers who participated in our programming. Now, in order to control resources, what we did is we utilized a tier approach in which the early child centers most in need received most services. Based on self-report, using a survey of self-report, centers that were identified as being more or less okay, we'll call it, received Tier 1 designation, and their intervention consisted of a two-hour workshop on how to implement a four-component wellness plan based on Caring for Our Children national standards. And then those who ended up self-reporting as, you know, room for improvement, we'll say, received the Tier 2 services, which included that same two-hour workshop, but also involved technical assistance provided by the master teachers in the form of three monthly visits to the actual centers themselves to see how things were going and to encourage them and provide assistance along the way. The centers also received like curriculum materials such as books, handouts, etc., and playground equipment to encourage physical activity. A registered dietitian also met with the early child care centers and their catering companies to ensure that the meals and snacks had menu changes that allowed them to meet the required guidelines and still be cost neutral so as to maintain sustainability of our intervention. In order to collect data on the baseline and follow-up regarding the early child care centers, we utilized the Environment and Policy Assessment and Observation Tool, or EPAL, which I think is one of the greatest acronyms ever. And the EPAL is a validated observation tool for assessing the nutrition and physical activity environments of early child care centers. For our study, we looked just at nutrition. So therefore, we used a modified version that looked at nutrition and its eight nutrition subscales for assessing the nutrition. It says environments, but I should say context, because nutrition environment is actually one of the subscales within the tool. Despite this looking at just a nutrition score, as a quick aside, the observation protocol was still 15 pages long and required 6 hours per observation, so it's a very resource-heavy tool. Specific nutrition subscales involved here were regarded nutrition policies, nutrition education, provision of fruits and vegetables, high fat, high sugar, and beverages, items, etc. Data collection occurred in year two of the grant, and then again in year three, and trained EPAL observers went out in pairs to establish inter-rater reliability before observers went out individually to cover the centers that were involved. The analysis took place by way of scoring the EPALs, converting the recorded observations into assigned values on a three-point scale, ranging from 0 to 2, and then the scored items were grouped together based on their subscales, and the subscales were determined averaging the scores for the individual items and multiplying by 10 for a highest possible score of 20 per subscale. All that so that you can understand the results once we get to the results. And then lastly, the total EPAL score was determined by averaging the subscales. And as a quick point to make for those of y'all who aren't familiar with EPAL, higher scores are better than lower scores, but there is no specific score or standard at which early childcare centers are designated as good or bad. It just provides you with a way of understanding where the centers start and where they end up. So we use descriptive statistics to describe the performances at baseline and follow-up, and Wilcox and signed rank tests to determine whether or not there had been statistically significant changes from baseline to follow-up. Some of the EPAL information you'll find published uses t-tests, but our guidance from the CDC suggested that it's more accurate to use Wilcox and the signed rank test. I'm not busting anybody's chops on that. I'm just explaining why we did it. So at baseline, we had 23 early child care centers involved, 13 in the priority zip code, 4 in the secondary, and 6 in the additional. But at follow-up, we were down to 18. Once again, long story short, there was a lot of suspicion on the part of the child care centers as to who are you and what do you want to do here. Nobody apparently likes to be observed or monitored or evaluated. Despite our efforts at convincing them, we are here to evaluate our program to make sure it's working its best to serve you and the important work you do for the children. There was still some suspicion. And honestly, four of these groups that dropped out, it was because of either ownership changes or going out of business or getting ready for reaccreditation. Only one center told us to bug off. That being said, though, there were no differences between the ECCs lost to follow-up and those observed at baseline as it related to their individual characteristics and the location within priority additional zip codes. As far as the types of centers we're dealing with, on average, there was 112 students enrolled in each center with number of staff being 12 to 0.3, so we had roughly 10 children per staff member. And as far as the credentials of the individuals working in the centers, about 1.4 staff had national early childhood certification per center, and almost 2 staff had college degrees or higher. So what did we find? So overall, we found that there was improvements from baseline to follow-up regarding the overall nutrition context within the centers. However, when we looked at the actual subscales, we only saw improvements in nutrition policies and nutrition teaching and education. Honestly, nutrition policies, there weren't that many to begin with. So in training the centers, we were able to have some pretty easy success there by showing them the benefit of establishing nutrition policies within their child care centers and reasons for adopting them. And now, having done that, that also helped play into the importance of nutrition teaching and education. This nutrition and teaching education went not just to the students, but also to the people who work in the classrooms inside the child care centers and the parents of the children as well. We didn't see any significant improvements in staff nutrition behavior. That would be like modeling type activities, or the nutrition environment, which would involve such things as vending machines, posters on the wall celebrating healthy eating and active living, that sort of thing. The fruits and vegetables, you see that we're at 0.05 there, which would make us close to significance, but then you could always argue clinical significance versus statistical significance. And one of the reasons that we probably didn't see change there is, as you can see from the scores, 20 being the highest, 0 being the lowest, it was already pretty high, and that's because they're part of the food program, so they had already existing standards that had to be met. And so the opportunity for improvement was probably limited there. However, that being said, surprisingly, on the provision of water side and the beverage side, there's definitely room for improvement still. Water, being specifically referring to, was water available for the children inside the classroom? How easy was it for them to access, et cetera? Because there were actually some centers I visited where kids like went all day without water. It was unbelievable. They'd have milk and stuff like that, but they'd come in from playing, and it wasn't necessarily the norm to go by the water fountain or anything. So what did we gather from this? Well, it suggests that the idea of training early child care center providers in evidence-based nutrition practices can, in fact, help improve the nutrition context of early child care centers serving racially and ethnically diverse low-income children. In addition, to find significant improvements in the early child care center's nutrition context as measured by a change in overall EPAL nutrition scores, they also experienced improvements in the specific subscales of policies and education. And these improvements are important due to the influence that early child care centers have, and as well as the staff behaviors in nutrition education, on children's helpful decision-making and eating habits. Therefore, we find that this TOUCH early child care strategy serves as a good pilot for these types of interventions in high-need areas. Due to the unique population that was served in the short time frame of 1 year between baseline and follow-up, this evaluation reveals the outcomes of the center's initial efforts within this intervention and what also might lead to subsequent practice and change over time. So in 1 year, the centers were able to experience improvements in nutrition policy change and nutrition teaching that might, in fact, influence additional changes in practice down the road. We had scheduled one more follow-up observation a year after our initial follow-up, but as I mentioned, the grant was brought to an end, so we weren't able to do that. But nevertheless, that was an evaluation suggesting that nutrition policy and practice changes can, in fact, improve nutrition context in early child care centers serving this particular population. Thank you.
Now is your opportunity to ask any or all of the presenters any questions that you may have. Don't be shy. Any questions?
We broadened it for the outlets on the ground. So because the Dun & Bradstreet lists are based off NIACS codes and they're not always the most accurate because outlets self-identify their NIACS code. So for the on-the-ground observation, we broadened it. Sorry, the question was, if you're looking to work with the zoning officials in your community, what type of language would you recommend to encourage them to include language that would facilitate availability of outlets selling fruits and vegetables and things like that? So this woman asked, said that we had broadened our definition. I was just clarifying, we broadened the definition of outlets on the ground. For zoning, and in my study, I didn't have time to present for all the different types of outlets, and part of the reason why I didn't link like our fruit and vegetable stands and all that other stuff is we didn't have the on-the-ground measures. We also looked in the zoning data for farmers markets. Farmers markets, by the way, are zoned items. So in jurisdictions that don't have farmers markets, it's often because they're a prohibited use or they're not explicitly permitted. So in order to get a farmer's market in a community, you actually have to have zoning authority to allow for that to happen. Sometimes it's an accessory use, like in a church parking lot or something on a weekend or something like that. They get an accessory permit to allow them to have a farmer's market at certain times of the day, at certain times of the year, things like that. So you can go as specific, and I'd be happy to share with you language from other jurisdictions' zoning codes so you can see the wide range. We see a wide range of language from very generic general retail, that big box retail category, to very specific on outlet by outlet type, including fast food outlets and convenience stores. I also have a brief on this whole issue. We've got a couple of new ones coming up, so see me afterwards. I'd be happy to give you more information. Thank you.
Generation. Do you see generation? question again. I didn't quite get your first question. Could you repeat the first one again, please?
Sure. Yeah. Have you ever seen the new snacks standardization going to NAMA for more of a national standardization? Because it's kind of a compromise between the 250 and the 200 calorie differences. A little compromise with the sodium content. And, you know, so it's kind of a pick in the middle type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And your question is, will that go national? Do I ever see it going national? Boy, that's a really good question. I honestly don't know. I think our real objective was to see, is it useful? Did it have utility? Did it move us along in the direction that we wanted to go? I have to be honest and say the whole literature around snacks and snack food and what's the correct calorie target is not real clear, to be honest. I wanted to show those criteria because they are the ones that tend to be used most frequently. Are they the right ones? I honestly don't know. What I can say for us, again, they moved us in the right direction. One of the things we want to pursue, and again, this is campus-based, this is a very unique audience, is what proportion of their consumption is actually coming from snack food vending, and then does it fit with what that national data is suggesting? So that's a long-winded, sort of circuitous response to point number one. The second on funding, we had it set up so that we were going to be able to look at, did they lose money? And that's always the huge complaint. If we go healthy, we're going to lose money. Right at the point in time where we changed the policy, we also went from quarters to semesters. And we tried to stave that off, but that was, you know, the almighty power bigger than we. That was going to happen. So we could not tease out the effect of the change from quarters to semesters and the change in the policy. We now are a few years down the road. I can tell you it's pretty much rebounded. I can't tell you specifically, but I can tell you anecdotally, if it didn't, we would have been at the table much sooner. And they have confirmed, yes, we're back to our standard. One of the things that I can share is we did a randomized sampling of all undergraduate students. We asked them what did they want to see, and the younger audience, and I'm saying younger, 18, 21, 22, these are undergraduates, they want to see healthier items, and so we're able to use that data to drive the standards in the direction that they did. So I think they're a new consumer, and the new consumer is wanting this newer product. I will tell you, when we went to the staff, where the staff and even the medical center, it wasn't statistically significant, but we didn't have the same numbers. Those folks, historically, they're looking at the vending machine as the candy machine, and they were cranky about some of the changes. I got hate mail and nasty things, you know, about where's my chocolate, how dare you, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, whatever. So anyway, just give you some information. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, let's thank our presenters one more time.